And that, my friends, is how you do a trailer for a game. So Mythic are launching the Joan of Arc 1.5 Kickstarter on the 1st of October. Mm-hmm. 2-week campaign, very, very sharp. It's not a reprint. The other stuff is there. It's new and it's improved. And there's a whole bunch of extra stuff.
Yeah, we got to sit down with Az and Leo to talk about it. But everybody, you're going to have to wait for that one.
Yeah, there'll be stuff. There'll be stuff on the way for that. So yeah, it's there to tease and to get you excited and get you in the mood for all that delicious Joan of Arc cavalry charging up the field. Love it. Absolutely love it. I want to take a moment to thank everybody who has been helping us by coming across from YouTube, mm-hmm. coming onto ontabletop.com and using their account to comment on these videos on tabletop.com. Mm-hmm. The reason being is YouTube doesn't deliver our videos. YouTube has been weird for a long time. Our stuff gets caught up in all sorts of weird censorship and everything else. Mm-hmm. So the only place that we have full control of where we can, as a community, actually get together and do everything is our spiritual home over at ontabletop.com. And when you go there, the URL will change to beastsofwar.com. But that's because of the whole SEO thing. And it'll take time, but it will gradually change. But if you come across there and post a comment, we've chucked up some usernames there, mm-hmm. of people that I want to thank from the bottom of my heart, coming across and posting their comments, getting involved in the dialogue, getting involved in the community. We've had loads of people over rating games and doing all sorts of things. We've refired up the community newsletters. We have a brand new, beautiful community newsletter going out. So watch your mailbox for that. And then we have something special in the works for the Cult of Games members, for our kind of our backers, our supporters in the Cult of Games, previously known as Backstage. We have something in the works for you guys as well. This week, we're going to give away a £50 sterling, for what it's worth these days. We're giving away a £50 sterling voucher to spend on store.ontabletop.com. So we'll be picking a random commenter from this post over at On Tabletop. Okay, so please post away on YouTube. Remember to always hit like, subscribe, ding the bell.
Even if it doesn't do much.
For all the difference it makes, but, you know, let's go through the motions, guys, because, you know, it, someday it might actually help. But what really helps is coming across to ontabletop.com, post your comment in there, get involved in the comments. We've always been about community. We've always been about these shows. They're not just about us sitting here preaching to you or a, you know, just giving you a one-way conversation. They're conversation starters. And for us, it's about what happens in the comments below that is the most important thing. It's always been like that in about the 10 years that we've been doing this. And it will always remain to be about that because it's about community. So we'll be picking a random commenter and they will win £50 voucher to spend on the On Tabletop store where they can pick up 40K, Age of Sigmar, Bolt Action,
Conquest,
SPQR. Black Seas, SPQR, mm-hmm. loads of hobby materials from Galeforce 9 and Green Stuff World, and some hobby materials that we're gradually introducing ourselves. Ooh. But more on that soon. Just we'll call it the Lloydy Range.
Oh, but please, can we just get a little caricature of Lloyd's face?
So yeah, once again,
logo.
You know, technically, if we were running this like a proper YouTube channel, it should just be a face as the icon.
That's really?
It. Yes. Yes.
Right.
We need lots of faces. We just put Ben's face. We'll get the highest click through rates in the world.
That's it.
Because
we'll just do the rest of the show like this with Ben up, so we make sure it's in the thumbnail.
Yes, because half the YouTube viewing public will be looking at it going, my God, it's the most handsome man I've ever seen. And then the other half will be looking at it going, oh, a human gradually transforming into a badger. How is that even possible? Okay, so updates. The Infinity Campaign, Asteroid Blues, is going to be launching on Monday at some point.
At some point.
So stay tuned for that. We have a little bit of a sneaky preview for you guys. As you know, each year we do a collaboration with the guys at Corvus Belli, where we set up the War Console Global Wargaming Campaign System for them. So they're running the Asteroid Blues, if you bring it up. So Infinity players, this year, you're getting to play on an asteroid. You're going to fight over the asteroid. So we're not going to show you too much here because I don't want to give too much away. There's a nice, you can learn a lot more on Monday whenever
there's
you log in.
There's some seriously nice artwork this year.
The artwork is gorgeous. So, once again, you know, the story mechanics, the whole thing are by the team at Corvus Belli. If you have any issues with the system or whatever, we'll be handling the technical support just to make sure that everything hopefully runs as smoothly as possible for you guys. But yeah, come Monday, that will be firing up and we'll be sending out all of the announcements and stuff for you guys to get involved. Four-week campaign.
Yeah, with a second phase at some point.
Yeah. There's a four-week campaign. There's a couple of different phases in it, okay, where the missions are going to change. It's not a very long campaign, so get your games organized, get your buddies organized, and relax and have fun. That's what it's all about, is just having some fun with it. On that front, I've started to get the final details for what's happening for the global D-Day campaign with Flames of War.
Ooh.
Yeah, so like buses.
So, last week, I managed to get a sit down with the guys at Battlefront and we were discussing it. And we have managed... to add something extra to the whole thing. It's going to be a campaign where you can play either Flames of War and or tanks.
Oh, interesting.
I was talking to the guys and I said, we all collectively thought, you know, we want to open up participation as much as possible.
Yeah.
So there's this beautiful map once again, and it's got these historical tracks that you can follow through the campaign. But what we wanted to do was to open it up to not only Flames of War players who are playing that, but also to players who want to play tanks. Tanks is a much simpler game. It's all about tanks. Mm-hmm. And you can do some great tank battles and tank skirmishes and things like that. So it was something that was important to me because I wanted to... These global campaigns are all about participation, mm-hmm. and it's about trying to get as many different people involved in just enjoying their hobby with other folk and then sharing globally that enjoyment, you know, mm-hmm. so they can get involved in the individual forums for each faction, and they can upload their battle reports, mm-hmm. you know, with some snaps of photos and things like that. And it's just about sharing and having some fun with it. So to get tanks in there, I saw as an important step for us to be able to say, well, hang on a second, you can be inexperienced and pick up a simpler game and still get involved and participate in this global thing that is happening.
That's also a game where you're not having to worry about getting a full army on the table. So if you haven't been prepping like we have for months, you only need a couple of tanks aside. Potentially you can play it with, I think it's 2 Shermans, 3 Stugs or something in the little starter set, where you can buy individual, you know, you could set up Barkman's Corner, have one Panther and just have a row of Shermans getting killed by things like that.
You could set up something along the lines of Vitman's Wild Ride if you wanted to, just for a giggle.
How does it work? Is there going to be different missions then, depending on what game system you pick?
Yes. So as you go into each of the... So each week, mm-hmm. the way it's currently working, it might be subject to change. We're still a good few weeks, a couple of months away from this, okay? But basically each week, a step of the front. So there'll be 3 individual tracks that you can follow, or you can fight anywhere you want, but they're basically 3 tracks, theme tracks. And each week, it moves forward and the previous one closes. Okay. Yeah,
so it starts on the beaches and then works its way into Normandy. And I think the tracks each follow one of the actual lines of the specific armies. Mm-hmm. So the British line, the British and Commonwealth line, rather, follows their route from the beaches and into Normandy. And the American two armies were kicking off from different beaches and went in different directions. So. Mm-hmm.
So when you're in any of those theaters of operation, you'll be able to download the missions if you want to play the official missions. Mm-hmm. But equally, you can make up a mission of your own and just submit a battle report based on a mission of your own. Because remember, these campaigns are not all they're not about hard and heavy rules. This is not tournaments kind of stuff. This is about wargamers all over the world just getting together and sharing our passion for something. And that passion is shared through some cool battle reports, mm-hmm. you know, and cool photographs and just, you know, supporting one another and saying, hey, you did a great job.
Yeah.
You know, done.
It's not like it's a real war. No. Like in real war, when you go out and campaign, you want to win. Yes, you may want to think, oh, it'd be fun to win, but it really is about taking part how it unfolds.
This is about the global club that is our communities.
You know? Important question, though. So for anyone who has never taken part in one of the campaigns before, what all can they build into it whenever they're actually building up their battle report?
So, right. So here's a basic outline of how an on-tabletop global campaign works. So an on-tabletop global campaign is an online system where people all over the world can influence the take and hold of individual theaters of operation. So often there's a map, and then on that map there are points. Mm-hmm. And on that point it'll show which faction currently has the most scoring points and currently holds that theater, okay? You set up an account, all right? And this is all completely free for you guys, okay? So you set up an account, and then when you're setting up that account, you choose the faction you're going to fight for, okay? And that could be in some, it's in like the Infinity campaigns, each faction kind of fights on their own. Mm-hmm. In something like a Flames of War campaign, those factions are there bundled into Axis and Allies. So the factions kind of group together. But you still choose the individual faction that you're going to represent during that campaign. Mm-hmm. Once you've done that, there's a load of community things, okay? So you each faction often gets its own forum within the platform that's private to you and other members of that faction. Mm-hmm. In there, you can plan your assaults, you can plan what theaters you're going to go for, you can plan how you're going to concentrate your efforts as a group. You can take into account that there may well be spies in there. But that's
have that a couple of times,
didn't
we?
It's just part and parcel of the fun of the whole thing. You know, just take it in your stride and enjoy it. You know, it's, if there's a bit of spying going on, whatever, look, that's just life. That's how it is. Go and spy back.
Yeah, counterintelligence.
You then get the opportunity to upload your battle reports. Mm-hmm. So you choose a theater where you fought the battle against your friend, okay?
Or your arch enemy,
yeah. And then you construct a battle report. And the battle report is made up of photographs, text. Mm-hmm. You can put videos in there. Mm-hmm. You can upload your army lists. And the way the platform kind of works is that the live scores are just based on what you are putting in as the results, win-loss ratio. But after the campaign ends, there's this optional thing called the AI Historian, which whenever you run it, it goes back through all of those battle reports and does basically a qualitative assessment of them. So, and what that qualitative assessment is on the balance of probability, how likely did this battle actually take place?
Yeah, so...
So what it does is it analyzes the text, analyzes the photographs, analyzes things like uploads, analyzes whether your battle report is linked to an opponent's battle report, because if you both upload a battle report, one of you can generate a token to give to the other opponent, who can then put in that token, and it links your two battle reports together.
Okay.
And all of these things award little bonus points. Okay, so in reality, there's, I don't believe, it depends on the system, I don't believe there's any kind of like negative bonus points where battle reports end up being completely dismissed. There are some instances where we moderate and we go through the battle reports just to see if there's any chod in there, so or spam,
someone
or whatever.
Just creates a bare bones one and goes 1-0.
Yeah, there's some of that that is just taken into account, but mostly, you know, it's there just for spam and stuff. But really what happens is the reports where time and effort are put into it, the bonuses build up, and it can change the outcome of what you think is happening. And we call that the fog of war. Okay, so while the battle and while the whole campaign is taking place, with all of the propaganda and everything that's going on, you have a feel for what you think is happening in the campaign. But it's not until the campaign is over and the historians get time to sit down and analyze what actually happened and are able to filter out all of the propaganda and stuff, that you then get the final results. And it gives a little bit of a cliffhanger, because otherwise you could find, one of the reasons we built that system that way was, A, we love the fog of war. I think fog of war in narrative campaigns is always something that adds a bit of interest. And secondly, it just, it always gives you that hope that yes, you might think you're losing, but with quality reports, you may actually be winning. And you just don't know it yet. So, you know, any good campaign needs a twist, or at least the potential for a twist at the end.
Because if you think about it from a narrative point of view, if you weren't getting good reports from the front, you would make bad decisions and you would lose the war. Right? If you didn't know what was going on. So if you're making really good battle reports, I think that really plays into the whole feel of it as well.
So, what else happens? We have a full achievements system, okay? So as you're adding all of these battle reports and commenting and giving people ratings and thumbs up and everything else, you unlock achievements and you get lots of little medals and things like that, and you unlock a lot of XP. And then as you gather up XP, you unlock ranks and you gradually go up through the ranks of the campaign, and you get a cool little like rank badge to show what level of commander and stuff you are within the campaign. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun if you take it in the spirit that is intended. Okay. And it's intended just to be fun. You know, if you're a green-eyed monster, and you come to it with jealousy in your heart, forget about it. It's not for you. It's not for you. It's there for people to gel, support one another, have some fun. You know, if there's something that is broken or a spammer has got in or whatever, don't panic. Report it. We have support that runs throughout the entire campaign. And we take care of that, you know, but it's there. It's a big sand pit, you know, just get stuck in, enjoy it for what it is. It's very, very cool. It's very cool. And I love watching them. And
so,
yeah.
So don't sit down at the screen and go, domination must happen. Right. Yeah. That's not really the approach.
Yeah. Definitely do that.
Now, on the news of the tanks thing, I just want to let folk know that to try and help support that, I brought in a bunch of tank stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you fancy getting involved in a global campaign, okay, getting involved in Infinity One launching on Monday, if you've never played Infinity, it's probably going to be tough. But the World War II campaign, the D-Day campaign, is still far enough off that if you fancy you want to get involved in that and get stuck into that, and you want a slightly lighter or a good bit lighter entry into it, tanks is a good way to do that. So to get involved, what we've done is I brought in a bunch of tank stuff so that if there's any new recruits or whatever that want to get involved, we have tank stuff there on store.ontabletop.com.
Yep.
And for the Cult of Games members, we have a code that is either out or just about to go out. And if you're a Cult of Games member, you're going to get it at 30% off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because we want to get it into your hands, because it's little tanks are awesome, man. Everybody loves little tanks. So if it's something that we want you to participate in the campaign, we want to try and reduce as many barriers as we can. So by bringing an easy pick up and play game like Tanks in, and we're putting a discount on there as well to make it easy for you. So you don't have many excuses not to get involved if you've ever fancied getting involved in a World War II global campaign.
I'm enjoying this Little Tanks thing because you're right. Everybody does love Little Tanks. I don't think I've ever seen anybody start their Flames of War army by doing the troops first. Has anybody ever seen that, or is it always the tanks get built first?
Did
you do it?
I did it once, yes, at the Flames of War weekend. Okay, I did the troops first because I wanted to get the slog out of the way so that I could focus in on enjoying the tanks.
I see. I always thought people front loaded the treatment.
But hang on a second now. You in a boot camp weekend, you're under pressure, and I wanted to paint these bad boys. So because of the pressure cooker nature of a boot camp weekend, I did the troops first.
That's why the energy levels were high.
Yes. Well, that and the copious amounts of energy drink. So
those 15-minute bursts.
But yeah, tanks.
I'm spent.
We have,
I think we've like spent
10 or 15 different tanks. What are you at?
That's you at the boot camp.
That was
Yeah. And I'm
oh, and I need more.
Flawless imitation.
Yeah, it pretty much was. It pretty much was.
You're lucky you can't see the gestures there.
I think we have about 10 or 15 different World War II classifications of tanks. We have the tank starter set there as well. It's a nice, easy way for you to get involved in World War. This is going to be the biggest thing since the last one.
And what? Is it going to be bigger than the next thing, or is the big thing going to be bigger again?
To quote a very wise man, that this campaign will be bad. I don't know what the next campaign will be fought with, but the one after that will be fought with sticks and stones. So we will do caveman wars.
That was Groucho Marx, wasn't it?
I think it was. I think it was. Some weird fuzzy head guy. Right. Last bit of news.
Surely would have been fought with fingers.
If I haven't managed to tease you into the Cult of Games, our very own secret society that I just didn't tell you about. You didn't hear that. But our very own secret society, the Cult of Games, with a 30% discount off tanks, with the little special thing that we've got coming up. If you're a fan of Jerry's dulcet tones and immense knowledge of all things hobby, Jerry has a series within the Cult of Games where this week he managed to whip out his brown stuff.
Mm-hmm. I did. You're right. Competing the triumvirate of stuffs.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. We're going to. I think there's more stuffs coming up. There's blue stuffs and stuff as well.
Yeah, but the important stuffs, the green stuffs, the brown stuff, the grey stuff.
Yes. The green, the blue, and the grey. The triumvirate.
It was inspiring stuff. I seen the comic this week.
Yes, it was. if we are basically looking at epoxies and stuff at the moment. So we were all very impressed with the brown stuff. Many of us are thinking of switching out from using green stuff to brown stuff.
I think it's the best.
Is there much of a difference between the different stuffs?
Yes,
there is. Massively so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And weirdly, I have a sneaking suspicion the brown stuff works out the cheapest. I believe it's actually cheaper than green stuff.
Yeah.
But because they're sold in different ways, you don't really get that idea. I went and weighed the brown stuff at one point, and I think it works out. Green stuff, I think, is the most expensive of all three, and in my opinion, the worst.
Yes. It's the most difficult to work with, I find.
And so this is why they made grey stuff, because green stuff's so tacky.
Yeah.
When you're working with it, it keeps sticking to your fingers all the time. So they made grey stuff so it's less tacky and a bit more stiff finish.
Yeah.
And then brown stuff's a joy. You barely even need to wet your tool at all. You can if you want. Keep it slick.
That's weird. So the brown's less sticky.
Yeah. And dries with a much firmer finish. I did a little video after the fact that will be coming out at some point where I just go through and compare three of them, compare how they look, how they work, how they finish, filing, drilling, sanding, stuff like that. Just going, here are the three, and this is the sort of things you can do with the three, and why you might pick one over the other. But if I was pushed and just went, you can only have one from now to the end of time, I don't see a reason not to use the brown stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. The other little thing on this is we are running a little test just to see how it goes, okay? Where you can on tabletop on store.ontabletop.com, okay? If you buy any of the green stuff products or brown stuff products or gray stuff products, okay? What we actually do is we bundle up that video for you, and you can download and keep those videos. So we're experimenting with if you buy these things on the store, that we have supporting content that you can actually download and keep yourself. So you can keep a wee drive of the tutorials on how to use these materials and things like that. So if you're not a Cult of Games member, you can still kind of get access to those things if you buy the bits and pieces. If you pick up some brown stuff, you can get Jerry's dulcet tones on how to best execute your brown stuff.
Yes,
delivered to you to keep. So we're giving that a go. See how we get on with it. All right. News, Ben. Mm-hmm. Ben, what is happening in the world this week?
Okay, so kicking off, we're looking at some stuff from the world of Warhammer 40,000. So the big news is that today, at some point, probably right now, at this very second, there are the pre-orders going live for the new codices, or codexes, as Games Workshop like to refer to them as, for some more chapters in the Space Marine Arsenal. So you've got new codexes coming out for the Iron Hands and the Raven Guard. So you've got your emo boys and your mechanics who love bionics. So some really awesome stuff there. This also comes alongside some new models and things. So we've got two upgrade kits as well. So both of the different chapters are going to have a bunch of shoulder pads, heads, weapons, and accessories that you can
use. Helmets, Ben.
Yeah, so you can use them alongside your rest of your Primaris stuff. It's all scaled to that, which is really, really cool. Bring back the beaky helmet, as they say, and some awesome looking stuff as well there. I love the fact that the Iron Hands have got loads of bionics in there. Wish there was a few more bionics, maybe bionic legs and that kind of thing. That could have been cool, but that's something maybe you can get in and convert yourself up potentially, which is very cool. And on top of that, there's two new characters as well. So we've got two leaders for both the Iron Hands and the Raven Guard. You've got Kayvan Shrike, who we saw a little while ago, one of the previews that they did at a different event. And we also have Malkan Ferios, who is the leader of the Iron Hands there as well. So you've got a big badass guy there with his awesome looking shoulder mounted heavy bolter that's going to be sort of raining death on everything. And he also has his massive cog axe as well there, so that he can chop through enemies at the same time, which I thought was very cool. On top of that as well, they are also going to be releasing some new stuff for just the general Primaris Space Marine range. So we've seen these before as well, but we've got the Phobos Lieutenant coming back, who looks very, very cool. And we've also got the Eliminators. So if you want to include some snipers into your force, you've got the option there as well. So yeah, lots of stuff coming for Space Marines, and it's another step in the direction to sort of covering pretty much every chapter that Games Workshop have made in the past. So I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing things like Space Wolves and Blood Angels and Dark Angels very, very soon as well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, can I ask then, from my esteemed colleagues here, can somebody give me a little bit of background on the Iron Hands and the Raven Guard?
Well, the Raven Guard are kind of a spec ops kind of Space Marine chapter. So they're very much into just shadow tactics, fighting behind the lines. You know, not very much.
They're a successor chapter, are they?
No. These are both original chapters, Raven Guard and Iron Hands, if I remember right, Jerry.
I didn't think they were. Iron Hands first founding, but I don't think Raven Guard are, unless they retconned it.
No, Raven Guard are first founding. Corvus Corax was their Primarch, if I remember right.
Okay.
Could be.
Because I remember there was a Horace Heresy novel where the Raven Guard had got decimated. The Emperor gave their Primarch access to his gene tech to actually help their Primarch rebuild the numbers of the Raven Guard.
Yeah.
And then the Alpha Legion came in, mucked up the data, stole the data, and then the Raven Guard had tons of mutants being made.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, so the neophytes would grow into Space Marines super quickly,
yeah,
but then they would degenerate.
Nasty.
Yeah.
Nasty. I take it the chapter has recovered since then.
They're still about today.
They just now kind of degenerate into, well, emo degenerates.
The Iron Hands, on the other hand, they're.
Is the motto then for the Raven Guard? It's so unfair.
No, Warren, that's too much effort. It's. Iron Hands, on the other hand, they're very much into their bionics, into interring space marines and dreadnoughts and stuff.
Yeah.
So I am hoping to see that they're maybe allowed to take extra dreadnoughts and things in their list because it's sort of a part of their backstory. Other than that, I don't really know too much about them.
Yeah. Well, we will find out more now when the codex drops.
I like to look at the snipers, though, specifically.
The snipers are great. But the Space Marine snipers have always been beautiful models.
Mm. Well, these are full Space Marine snipers now, though, instead
not
of Scout
the Scouts,
snipers.
Yeah.
Although Scout snipers are still vicious.
Yeah.
It's one of the interesting things that's come up with a lot of this stuff, because obviously we're seeing a lot of this move towards Primarising. That's now a word. Yeah. All of the Space Marine range. And so what would traditionally have been Scouts, they still exist obviously within the lore and everything, and they're included in the codexes and stuff, but they're not necessarily part of like the way that we now see the Primaris. Mm. And so it's going to be really interesting seeing how that works when it comes to certain chapters that relied heavily on them. So for example, Black Templars had the Neophytes. So they were the sort of the guys that were training up to become Space Marines and fought alongside their, you know, Black Templar brothers and stuff like that. And then you've got Space Wolves, who had their Scouts as the older Space Marines, who have sort of gone off and done something else as veterans. So it's going to be really interesting seeing what they do there. Maybe we get new models, perhaps, for both of these things, to try and sort of cut down on the Scouts and sort of bring something new into the fold. It would be kind of interesting. So, yeah.
Well, the other big news, Ben, was the Psychic Awakening in the new Eldari.
Mm, yeah, so this was another thing that came out this week, and this was a first look at the prophecy that will herald what's coming in this new campaign that we talked about a little bit before on the weekend. So there's going to be a new massive campaign that involves all the different factions of Warhammer 40,000. It's going to be a little bit more grimdark than it already is, which is kind of interesting. So this first prophecy hinted at something potentially nasty coming back. So Slaanesh in some form returning to the world of Warhammer 40,000. We've already seen him or her or it coming back to the world of Age of Sigmar. And so now it'll be really interesting to see how that sort of clashes with how the Eldar are set up right now, or the Eldari, sorry. So one of the big things is that we're going to be seeing the Aspect Warriors coming back. So one of the big focuses of the new first book in this campaign is going to be about the Phoenix Warriors and that kind of thing. So we got to see some models for the Howling Banshees. So we got a Howling Banshee Exile there in plastic, as well as something that's a little bit different as well. So Howling Banshees have been sort of traditionally female, but within Eldar society, males can also become Howling Banshees. And so that's what you see with the second image there, which is actually for a Yennari exarch. So a Yennari are effectively Eldar that have become fed up with Eldrad Ulfwen and his failure to effectively save the Eldar race. Mm-hmm. And so now they have turned their attention to a new god, the god of death, which has been summoned forth in the form of the Yinkarn, which you should hopefully see in a different link, hopefully. And so this was all the stuff that happened in the Black Crusade and everything before, all the crazy stuff happened with 40K moving into 8th edition. So there's an entirely new sect of Eldar within the Eldar as a whole who have sort of brought together Dark Eldar, Eldar, all sorts of different things. And so there's going to be these two different warring factions fighting for control of the Eldar and sort of keeping them alive and hopefully taking down Slaanesh as well, which would be quite interesting.
Wow.
The sculpt on this is crazy.
It's insane.
Yeah, it needs shot in the face immediately.
I accept this logic, Jerry, completely. Wow.
Yes, we need to kill that with fire.
But it's already on fire.
Okay, so when are we expecting that to drop, Ben?
So it should be in the next couple of weeks, maybe in the next couple of months. It's going to be a really big, long-running thing. So the focus is going to be on this being lots of different books that will start to serve each of the different factions and bring new models into the fold. So the first one seems to be very heavily focused towards the Eldar. But hopefully we're going to see some stuff in the future for the likes of the Orcs, potentially, as well.
Yeah.
Necrons seem like a big force that could be involved in something like this. Would be kind of interesting. So, yeah, we'll see where it goes.
Spoilers, okay. Eldrad Ulfric was right the whole time. He'll get to the end and he'll go. You see now why I said not to do that?
And I am wondering, like, how much more grimdark can it get?
Well, none more grimdark, really.
That's what I thought. I would have thought it could have been no more grimdark.
Well, have they reached absolute dark?
It's
now that the Raven Guard are here, they've reached absolute dark.
I think the Raven Guard really, really did say that this is as dark as it can ever be. So,
Vanta Black, that's it.
Yeah. I do hope that they actually go back and release some models they need to release for the Eldar, though. Because Warp Spiders are still using the same metal sculpts from...
Do you know what
91 something like
as
that?
As are all of the X-Arcs,
which are so they're tiny, fat, stumpy sculpts compared to the new stuff. Whereas that's, I think, the sixth variation of the Howling Banshees.
Well, I was just about to say this on those Howling Banshees is that I can't particularly see much difference between them and the last batch of Howling Banshees.
I could line up five different generations of Howling Banshees, and all they've done is get slightly taller and thinner.
Yeah. Like there's nothing, and you know what, it says a lot for Jez's style choices on the Eldar, the fact that there doesn't seem to be
you can
change in it, that they are just beautiful. But I don't see, like, there's nothing there that would strike me the way, for example, the Primaris compared to a Space Marine.
Yeah, it's instantly and
not
different.
Not just because of the size. There's a lot about the Primaris versus the Space Marine that is different in its visual impact. But here I don't see that. Yeah. And that's fine. But like you say, there's a lot of models there that I would love to have seen something. Yeah, done for.
And they're missing a trick because there are other companies out there doing essentially the Phoenix Lords.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so Artel do the Phoenix Lords, and they do them beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Because GW haven't bothered in 20 odd years, more than 20 years since those came out.
91, that's around 30 year mark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's at that point, it's just embarrassing.
Okie dokie. Mm-hmm. Moving on, we have the Ossiarch Bone Reaper previews for the Age of Sigmar, Ben.
Yeah, so we got some new stuff for these guys. So we learned a little bit more about them at Nova that happened this year, a couple of weeks ago. But now we've seen a couple more sort of interesting images, because Games Workshop went out and, like, you don't want to see pictures taken on a potato. You want to see some cool pictures. So they started to put up some really awesome stuff for some of the other weird creatures and things that are going to be included in this range. So the first of these is the Gothizar Harvester, which has missed leg day, as everyone keeps pointing out. But this is a new monstrous creation that harvests the battlefield for the dead bodies of fallen soldiers, stuffs them into its back, and then turns them into new creations on the battlefield. A little bit like an old crypt cart, maybe, or something from the Vampire Counts. Mm-hmm. Sort of brings them back onto the tabletop to sort of feed the ever-churning wall of death that is the Ossiarch Bone Reapers. As well as that, it's also a combat monster, apparently, as well. So it's got these big, huge scything arms and maces and all sorts of things for crushing things too. So it's going to be a big heavy hitter when it comes to the Ossiarch Bone Reapers. We also got to see a look at one of the other smaller units, but effectively a large one as well. And this is for the Immortus Guard, who are effectively going to be the ones that are going to be protecting your leaders and stuff when you're fighting in battle as the Ossiarch Bone Reapers. They are much like the rest of the Bone Reaper faction. Fashioned from bone that has been sculpted and turned into armor and weaponry, and then imbued with not just one soul but lots of different souls in order to make them fighting machines as well. And it's kind of like a little bit more of a mockery of the Stormcast Eternals that Nagash is trying to put forward and, you know, dig Sigmar with in the head, as he does. You're like a little bit of a nuggy, but a deadly one, I guess. And we also got to see a really big, well, a large picture that shows off basically a lot more of the force that's coming. And it's kind of putting forward a bunch of teasers, so we can see a couple more spellcasters in there, a couple more characters, and also some terrain, which would be really interesting to see come to the tabletop in plastic form. Whether or not it's just been done for this particular display, I don't know.
Oh, but I can guarantee you it hasn't been done just for that particular display.
So some interesting new models, and I really like what they're doing with this. Obviously, opinion is divided on the Gothizar Harvester. A lot of people love it. A lot of people hate it. It's a bit Marmite, as is pretty much anything from Games Workshop.
Yeah.
But looks really cool and inventive.
I don't hate it, but I just think it's a model that kind of lacks definition. It's hard to see just what it is. Do you know the way some models have a distinctive... They have a distinctive shape that can resonate with you.
The first time somebody sent me a picture of this, it was under the heading... Well, that'll be a bone dreadnought for 40k then, won't it?
Because it's
even got the dreadnought standard on top of its sarcophagus, like all the dreadnoughts used to have.
Yes.
But they really are doubling down on fantasy Necrons, because that's the resurrection barge.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. to go, what can we do? We're Necrons. We don't have Necrons in Age of Sigmar yet. We can add them. But we don't need to add Necrons. We've already got undead. And yeah. Necrons are science fiction undead. Oh, no, no. We can go both ways now.
Yeah. It's a strange model in that it doesn't have a particular character to it. Outline, from its shape, to make you look at it and go, oh, that's an epic looking thing. It looks like a potato in many respects.
One potato.
It lacks anything that really gives it that definition.
If you were to put a silhouette of that up, you'd be hard pressed to tell what it was.
Yeah.
Whereas if you were to put up a silhouette of a dreadnought or of a
Trigon or something Trigon like that, yeah.
Or a stormcast on a demigriff. Mm. Or
put a cloak on it and you've got a Sketsis.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Sketsis?
Dark Crystal.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. We are waiting patiently for the Bone Reapers. Do we see what else drops on that? And does look interesting.
I bet that entire faction, though, is a Marmite faction. Mm.
Yeah. But you know, probably. That's okay. You know, you're allowed Marmite factions as well. You know, in fact, if anything, I think I'd prefer Marmite factions, and that way not everybody's playing it.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So it's right. Next up we have Conquest news, Justin. The Dwegholm are on their way, mate. This is your faction.
Yeah, this is the faction I've been waiting on for Conquest, because they're not the dwarves.
Yeah.
They're the guys who killed the dwarves and defeated the dragons.
Yes.
So within the world of Conquest, these guys are basically small, short, little rage machines.
So they're not dwarves. They just happen to look like dwarves who killed the dwarves.
Who defeated the dragons. Yeah. They also have one or two still enslaved in their holds.
They were probably taller, then defeated the dwarves, then interbred with the dwarves and became shorter.
No, yeah, they just murdered the dwarves.
Yeah. Oh, they just murdered all the dwarves.
Yeah, they just killed all the dwarves. This is not a faction that is into taking prisoners or anything like that.
Right, so these guys are fearsome then, Justin?
These guys are absolutely fearsome. And it's actually because of their backstory. I got to sit down with Konstantinos and Leos from Parabellum to actually do a bit of a deep dive on these guys' background. So if you want to find out about it, it is out there for you.
Oh, we do have
deep dive on their background. But basically, these guys were slaves tunneled down into the earth, found the spirit of war, got infected by it, and then went buck mad and murdered everything.
So these are the Chaos Dwarves then. You should have led with that.
You're sure it's not because he's bald and grey?
No.
Just feeling affinity to him, no?
Hush. we've got a full faction release here. So you've got your heroes, you've got your line infantry, and I think my favourite out of them has to be their ranged units. I don't know if this is the ranged unit or not.
Yeah,
this is the ranged unit. Mm-hmm.
That box is a dual kit. It makes either the ranged or the sword and spear infantry.
Yeah. I would make the ranged infantry every time. They're just great in game.
Yeah.
And then we have elementals as well.
help, my dwarves are on fire.
No, they're not asking for help. They're going, yay, we're on fire. Let's go fight people and burn them.
So these are like burning dwarves of fire.
That explains where their hair went.
Yeah.
So some of the dwarves actually, because they're kind of tied to the elements, they actually take on the aspect of that element.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, it does mean eventually they are going to burn because it's still fire.
Yes.
But they're resistant enough to actually do a bit of warring first.
Yeah, also, they must be fearsome though. If you're paying the penalty that they're ultimately going to die, there must be a hell of a bonus.
These guys are beyond vicious in combat, and whenever you're actually in combat with them, you catch fire as well.
Oh, I love that.
So it's just like beginning of the round. Oh, by the way, I'm on fire. No, you're on fire.
Yeah.
Hugs.
Lovely.
If I break away, do I stop being on fire?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it's not. I have no set you on fire. She's like, whoa. Too hot. Yeah, that little guy is too spicy.
Anything more in that range?
That's mm-hmm. everything for the moment. But I have seen some of the stuff they're bringing out in the future. They have like big lizard creatures with cannons and things on it that they're working on. And
nice.
This is the faction that I want for this.
Okay, so that is dropping around the end of September. Mm-hmm. We've been long anticipating the Dwagholm. This is now the third faction.
Yeah.
It means that things are really ramping up now for the Conquest range.
The fourth one will be hot on its heels, which will be the Nords.
Yes.
So if you like your Viking-style stuff, definitely want to keep a wide eye out for.
Absolutely.
If you've got ones on fire and you say there's elemental stuff going on, is there other elements then?
Not that I've seen just yet.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Are you thinking of some watery dwarves coming to hug the fire berserkers and put them all out?
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
would you do this? Yeah. Clearly, this is the Romeo and Juliet of conflict. Or
it's
conflict.
How you create
Never the twain shall meet.
Yeah. Okay, next up, we have Firelock Games and the Phalanx Consortium are getting together to bring Blood and Valor to the tabletop, Ben.
So yeah, so this was something that's been previewed over the last couple of weeks, and we start to see a full look at one of their miniature factions that's coming out as well. So this is going to be coming in December, and Blood and Valor is all about World War One wargaming, which is really cool. So it's going to be focused on the mechanics and the kind of gist of Blood and Plunder, which is obviously their sort of flagship game. Mm-hmm. Ship.
Yep.
And then they're now taking that mechanic and sort of fixing it up to be used in World War One. So they're going to have models coming out for the US, the late war French, and the late war Imperial Germans as well. They are going to be including British within the rules and stuff, but there are a lot of British models out there as well at the moment. And so they're like, hey, you can just use those if you want for this game, which I think is really, really cool.
Yeah.
Sounds really interesting. Obviously, Blood and Plunder is a favorite that we've played quite a lot of. We really enjoy what they do with that game. Really fantastic models as well. Hopefully they'll go down the same route with what they've done here for the World War One stuff. So we'll have lots of nice one-piece things, which is really awesome for those people that want to get gaming straight away, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. And yeah, World War One is something that we didn't necessarily see played out on the tabletop that often. So it'll be really interesting what they do. We've seen a lot of pictures of them sort of setting up really interesting battlefields with trenches and that kind of thing as well. But it wasn't all like that in World War One, especially towards the end of stuff. So it'll be really interesting what they do with that one and how it all plays out. So
if you hook back through the Historicon coverage, mm-hmm. we played it. Well, I played it, and then I forced Jim to play it. Mm-hmm. So there's some really interesting things with it. They've tweaked the Blood and Plunder system, mm-hmm. so it's not just a straight reskin. They've added things in like you start with a set amount of command points based on your commanders, mm-hmm. And then they tick down. So every turn you bid on how many command you want to use.
Yeah.
And say you're starting with 9, I'm starting with 7. You might go, well, I bid me at the start, but then later on you won't get as many. Mm-hmm. If you run out of command points, you still get to activate, but you're always going to be counting as activating on a 0, mm-hmm. or you'll have bid a zero, mm-hmm. bidded. Which means rather than activating 2 units, you only get to activate 1.
Right.
So you can't just go, oh, I'm just going to burn it all so quickly, because then you really are hamstrung later on. Mm-hmm. But they've even done things like, I think anybody who fought in it is getting a list, and they've included people for their own personal amusement. So Tolkien fought in World War One, so he's in it as a, you know, it's not like he was a VC winner. Normally when you pick up a game like this, it is, you know, if they have named people in it, like Christopher Lee appears in Bolt Action, and they've got them because they're quirky rather than, you know, actually going, well, here's somebody who won all the medals, mm-hmm. you know. So I like that. It's just a really nice touch. And that, I think Rufus was saying that just was because it tickled him. That's why Tolkien is in there.
Did Tolkien win medals? No,
I don't believe so. No, it's simply...
He was there.
He was there and it's like, well, I'm going to include him. The game board...
Is Captain Blackadder there too?
I would be very depressed if he wasn't. along with Darling and George. Uh-huh. So we played on that. There are not rules for... tanks.
There is a tank scenario though.
But it's about capturing. You can't do anything with it.
Yeah. It's something I did talk to Rufus about was people were going, oh, you're doing World War One, where's the tanks? And he was just like, no, that's not the kind of game I'm making.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so they're not arriving the tanks at any point then?
No, the whole idea of it is it's not the massed battles. Mm-hmm. It's not trench warfare. It's about the skirmishes in No Man's Land.
Really interesting way to do World War One because this is where the interesting engagements took place, because the trenches trench warfare, as we have discussed at length over the years, trench warfare makes for a very bad war game.
Yeah. Well, No Man's Land makes for a bad war game. If you get your war game starting where it's you invading the opponent's trenches, there you get some interest.
Well, yeah, but it's in general. Yeah. In general.
So, yeah, so very tight little skirmish game. Good fun. Mm-hmm. Definitely worth watching.
And we have Firelock joining us in the studio next week.
Yes, so I'm looking forward to see what they've brought with them.
Yeah, so we're going to be spending a week with the guys at Firelock, getting some filming and stuff and some content to bring to you guys of the new and the latest stuff that they have coming.
So if you've got questions and stuff, this weekender would be the best place
to ask. If there's anything you want to know from Firelock, get them into the comments below, and we will do our best to...
I have seen them putting a big push on for Oak and Iron as well, so I'm very curious to see what stage they're at with it.
Yes, me too.
Well, the rule book for Oak and Iron is completely free to download right now, by the way. So you can go and give that a look if you want.
Guess where I'm going.
Ben, Savage Worlds RPG, have we an update on that?
Yeah, so Savage Worlds is a role-playing game that I picked up last year and absolutely fell in love with. It's completely generic in the sense that you can set it in any world you want, right? So it works for sci-fi, works for fantasy, works for horror, Wild West, whatever the kind of thing you want to do. And the new book has come out quite recently, which is the new sort of version of the core game. It's called the Adventurers Edition, which is really awesome. And it comes with everything you need to start playing the game with. It's really, really simple, really easy to play. I've used it personally for playing through a game sort of set and themed around the idea of the mummy in Indiana Jones, and it was absolutely hilarious. Really, really good fun. The real sort of focus is on you guys being the heroes, so you're like larger than life and bombastic and a bit crazy. Minions die in like one hit and all that kind of thing, but then you come up against like nefarious villains, dragons, that kind of thing that take a little bit more taking down and stuff. I'm currently thinking about trying to theme something to do like a superhero roleplay, which would be kind of cool. But the main sort of focus of what this news is that as well as the core book, there's a whole bunch of extra stuff coming out for it as well. So the core book gives you pretty much everything you need to learn to play the game. But on top of that, you've also got one called the World Builder and Games Master's Guide. And this is sort of set up to help people take that extra step towards creating things like convention games, setting things up for younger gamers as well, and sort of working on a little bit sort of extra stuff to help you build settings for the game as well. Because one of the big things is that it works for a whole bunch of different genres. So this kind of gives you some extra sort of bits and pieces to help you along in that sort of regard. On top of that, they've also put together a large essentials box set, which contains everything you pretty much ever need to use to play the game as well, which includes a whole bunch of things like cards and tokens and things like that. The other cool thing about Savage Worlds is that it's a roleplay game that has a real focus on being used alongside miniatures. So if you're starting in wargaming and you're moving over into role-playing games, Savage Worlds is a really, really good system to sort of take that sort of bridge between the two. So I definitely go and check that out as well. On top of that, they've got a whole bunch of extra stuff as well. So all the stuff within the Essentials box set that I was just talking about there, like action cards and stuff for creating NPCs and scenarios and that kind of thing, that can all be bought separately too. The book has a map and a change up as well, which I think is really cool. So they've added in a lot of stuff to including new artwork, some sort of tweaks to some of the ways that you create characters. They've included loads of new talents and skills into the mix as well. And they've made it a lot more readable too, which I think is a really good idea. And the book is pretty small and tiny as well, so you can sort of carry that around and do what you want with it. I've had a lot of fun with this game, and hopefully a lot of people out there will go and give Savage Worlds a go themselves as well.
Awesome. Cool. Awesome.
There's a lot of supplemental material for Savage Worlds out and about if you go hooking. So, for example...
That means looking for...
Acting Cthulhu.
Yes.
It's a set of supplements and books about World War II gothic horror.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's no system in that, but at the end of every chapter or whatever, or whenever they're giving you a scenario, they give you the stat lines if you want to play it in Call of Cthulhu or if you want to play it in Savage Worlds.
Oh.
And Acton Cthulhu also has a skirmish game. So if you want to go for weird punk pulp World War II horror, that's a good set of books to pick up. Because there's some really fun, interesting ones in there.
Yeah, definitely check out Modiphius for that one. Yeah.
One of the other cool things about that as well is that they've signed up I think it's a section on DriveThruRPG and that kind of thing where you can submit your settings and worlds. So if you've come up with something you think's really cool for Savage Worlds, you can sort of make it look like a nice PDF document or whatever and stick it up, and then they'll help you sell it and that kind of thing as well, which I think is really good. So,
nice. Cool. Nice. Okay. Carnival Row RPG is up for download.
Yeah, so if you've been watching the new Amazon series and enjoyed it, I've started watching it about halfway through now, really quite enjoying it. Orlando Bloom is wooden as an actor, but it's also very cool, and I like the world building they've done with it. But anyway, Nerdist got involved with this, and they've put together a RPG download as a supplement that you can use to go alongside the Cypher system. So if you're interested in that, you can go and watch them play through it as well, learn a little bit more about the Cypher system itself, and see whether or not you like role-playing in the world of Carnival Row. The other cool thing about the little download they've done with the PDF is that obviously it includes rules for using it with that Cypher system. Not that I don't know too much about that one anyway, but if you like that, they've also added loads of additional lore and things in there as well. So if you don't want to particularly use Cypher for this, you could just use it and transfer it into something like, for example, Savage World, and just use it as a sort of like baseline for all of your campaign building and that kind of thing within the world of Carnival Row. So yeah, awesome stuff there.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet, so I'm going to have to go and check it out. Is it good?
It's rather good, yeah. I've enjoyed it. As I say, the acting's a bit weird, but the overall storyline, everything they've done for it is really good. Amazon's clearly poured a lot of money into it as well. And so the settings and all the characters look really interesting and diverse. A lot of people have actually been talking about the fact that they'd love to see Carnival Row, not necessarily just done as a role-playing game, but I think it would actually work quite well as a war game as well, so like a skirmish game too. So be interesting to see if people do some conversions and stuff for some of the characters. It would be kind of cool. So
okay, well, the final bit of news, and a big one, one that we've all got our eye on, and this is for Marvel Champions. And we have the first hero pack announced,
Yeah, so this is a Marvel game that I'm exceedingly excited about. I'm a massive Marvel fanboy. Absolutely love it. Woo! Yeah. Thor. Woo! Fat Thor. Woo! But Marvel Champions is the new LCG, which is coming out from Fantasy Flight Games, a fully cooperative game. The big thing about that, just before I dive into the new hero pack, is that they've made it. This is the first set they've ever done that does this, where everything you need is in the core box, which is absolutely fantastic. You don't have to buy three of them in order to actually play the game properly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, moving on to the first hero pack. Captain America is going to be arriving shortly after the release of the core game, so you can start using him to lead your Avengers into battle against Ultron and Rhino and all these different characters that come in the core set. He'll also be arriving alongside a villain pack as well. So the villain pack is for Green Goblin, so you've got some extra stuff coming on that side as well, which is really, really cool. But yeah, Captain America looks awesome. Loads of stuff in the set which will be useful for him. It's specifically tailored to him, so you get Captain America's shield and a whole bunch of cards that sort of tied to his personality and the way that he fights in the comic books and stuff. And the deck is entirely pre-made so that you can just use it straight out of the box and start gaming with it. You can obviously do a little bit of deck building if you want, so there's going to be some extra bits and pieces in there, sort of changing things around and sort of changing the focus of how Captain America works for you and within your group, for example. But it's a quick and easy way to get stuck straight into Marvel Champions with one of your favorite characters. And they're going to be doing exactly the same thing with all the other heroes coming up as well. So yeah, very excited for this. Already pre-ordered my copy of Marvel Champions. Cannot wait.
There you go, Ben, a Spider-Man costume.
There you go. That's your news for this Christmas. Week.
You're missing the concept there.
What's that?
If we put Ben in a Spider-Man costume to do the Weekender, it would be amazing. Totally amazing.
It would be the amazing. Yeah.
Which Spider-Man though? Because there's quite a few of them now.
Well, the amazing one, obviously.
The amazing Spider-Man. Yes.
It would have to be. Obviously, we'll come into a dispute, and you'll have to sort of cut me out of some of the episodes.
Yes. You have me walking away from this episode, picking my favorite bit of news. The bit that has intrigued me the most, I think, is the Savage Worlds RPG.
It's really good. It's really. Good.
I think that's my pick of the week. Of the thing I'm going to go and read more about after the episode.
I can lend you some good stuff to read if you would like.
Happy days. Okay, next up, Kickstarters, or last up, Kickstarters. So we've got a couple of Kickstarters for you this week. Ben, what have you picked?
Cool. So there's one Kickstarter that's live right now, and there's one that's a little bit of a preview for something coming in the future. So the first of these is just something that we don't normally talk about in Kickstarter land, and that's Wargaming, but at a different scale. So this is a set of 15 mil fantasy creatures from the guys at Splintered Light for Warriors of the Blackfoot Forest.
Love it.
Blackfoot Forest. So yeah, so this is a range of beastmen, monsters, minotaurs, tree men, ents, weird creations, terrain, heroes, and all sorts of things that you could use for either wargaming, skirmishing, role-playing potentially in 15 mil. These guys have been going for quite a long time now, and a lot of the sculpts by Ben Sein here that you can see have been getting better and better over the years. I absolutely love looking through their range because it always tempts me to start picking up some interesting stuff and playing in 15 mil and that smaller scale of wargaming.
Glad to hear that.
I'm also really tempted by this range as a resource, as a dungeon master. I think I've talked about it a little bit in the past, but I think the idea of picking up smaller scale miniatures like these and using them for your heroes and your villains and your dungeon crawls and things makes it a little bit easier for dungeon masters to have that massive collection of miniatures without getting weighed down by the amount of stuff you've got to cart around to all your friends' houses and
things. I couldn't agree more. I have a 28 mil dungeon bag, a big square bag, and it's got all my doors, my floor tiles, and all my various monsters and stuff in it. If I could swap that out for a 15 mil dungeon bag, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Fit in the pocket.
Oh, absolutely. But I think 15 mil, it should be the scale of role playing, because I think that the encounters and everything that you can do it can make so much more sense at 15 mil, because you can start to tell the wider story on the tabletop of what's happening, and not everything is so condensed to that 8x8 square or whatever that you're stuck within as with your typical kind of 28 mil approach. I'm all up for this. 9 days left of that one, guys. Yeah. So.
And they are pretty well funded. They've broke through quite a few stretch goals. So you've got things like the Twisted Stump, Beastman Hero. What else we got here? Ooh, wow.
Wolfen Hero. Yeah.
Well, he's wearing a loincloth.
He's wearing a loincloth, Justin. Good so. Bad. Yeah,
he looks like he's had an accident, though. Let's go back up. No, just go back up. It does look a bit.
That's his teal. He's not had a curry.
All right. Okay. That's brown stuff.
What were you saying there, Ben?
I was going to say one of the cool things about this as well is they've included a bunch of add-ons, so you can pick up things like their 15 mil adventurous sets, because they have actually done a whole bunch of stuff for dungeon delving. So they've got dragons, encounter sets that are.
Do they have doors?
I'm not sure if they have terrain elements.
If you don't have doors, Splinter Black miniatures, you need to sculpt some doors, okay? That's the most important thing in any dungeon kit, is to have a good selection of doors and
adventures are nice.
Cagey things. Hang
on. Go back up to the Adventure Heroes. I recognize him. Hello, Slain.
Who's Slain?
2000 AD.
Which one's that? The one over there?
Based on the Bisley Pat Mills. But he's essentially a Celtic demigod. He's like Hercules, but in Ireland.
Nice.
Fantastic set of comics. You've never got into 2000.
No, I never got into
it. Track down Slain.
Yeah.
He warp spasms out all the time. Just kids. Essentially like Irish myth turned up to 11.
Wow.
You don't really need to ramp up Irish myth too much if you ever start reading it. It's mostly Mendel anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's great.
Fantastic. Yeah,
I'm loving those sculpts. I love the fact that the beastmen aren't just goats.
Yes.
So he's got fishmen, bearmen, wolfmen, birdmen, you know, any sort of mutos.
One of the interesting things about it is that I've had this thing in my mind for a really long time that I want to, mainly because it's easy to paint, but I want to create a bear army for a fantasy war game.
You mean Justin wants to create a bear army for a fantasy war game? And so or are we talking about a different kind of bear army here?
A big grizzly one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Although, wait a minute. That might also be the same thing.
Do you want grizzlies in your bear army, Justin? Yeah.
So bear with beards then? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Bears with beards.
There is tons of stuff on this Kickstarter.
Isn't this Kickstarter awesome? Yep.
Yeah, but for all their add-ons and stuff that you can grab, you've got so much to choose from. It's cool.
Well, guys, go and check it out. Splintered Light Miniatures, The Warrior of the Blackroot Forest. 9 days left to go. Definitely worthy of support. We are officially throwing our weight behind the 15 mil for RPG campaign. Let's change the scale of this,
What's
guys.
Happening? Why has
Let's
nobody said the word saga
Tiny
yet?
Saga.
Tiny saga.
Tiny saga.
Okay, finally, we have a preview of Titans by Go On Board. Yes, Ben, what do we know?
So this is a game by the creators of the Valhalla card game, which we talked about a couple of months ago, which did exceedingly well. Mm-hmm. Came out in its own native language and then got reprinted in English and was packed with amazing artwork and was a really, really fun game. They've now come to the tabletop with a board game rather than a card game called Titans, as we were just saying. Mm-hmm. So this is set in 17th century historical Europe. So it features all the different factions that you would imagine from the time. You've got Polish, Swedes, that kind of thing. But the big sort of tweak and change here and the sort of selling point is that the actual armies are supported by massive titans. So the fight for Europe has descended into this horrible beleaguered struggle where no one's really pushing forward and creating like the winning faction, that kind of thing. So they've awoken these massive titans, these icons of the different realms and factions, and they now use them to fight their battles out across Europe. And you can see some of the miniatures they've been working on, hopefully, is through the Kickstarter preview. The game works for 1 to 4 players, and it's a proper dudes on the map game. So this is one which is all about pushing around large amounts of units and that kind of thing, and taking control of stuff. And there are a whole bunch of different ways for you to win the game. So as well as being able to just control territory and that kind of thing, they've also been focusing on some additional elements that kind of go in the face of the traditional dudes on the map sort of way of playing. So you've got secret objectives and sort of intrigue and stuff behind the scenes as well. On top of the different models that you can see here, so you've got the historical stuff and the big titans that add that little bit of a fantasy element to there. They've got some absolutely stunning artwork, which is a sort of carry on from what they did with Valhalla, which sort of really makes the game feel bright and vibrant and interesting as well. So hopefully hear a little bit more about this in the future. We'd love to see some videos of how to play it as well, but the Kickstarter is sort of aiming for a November launch, so watch out for that. But they're taking sort of tips and anything that you want from the community to sort of feed into it ahead of the launch so they get things just right for the Kickstarter later on this year.
Awesome. Well, that is your lot, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember that tomorrow morning we have the XLBS show, which is for our Cult of Games members, where we're going to be relaxing with the cult and just going over some of their hobby, some of our hobby, and other bits in between. It's a nice, chillaxed, funny show. So if you fancy becoming a supporter of On Tabletop, the one way to do it is to join the Cult of Games. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. Remember, there's a £50 voucher. Come on over to ontabletop.com and post your comment.
Yep, that and the winner has been chosen from last week's contest. Yeah, so check out the Prize Claim Center.
Check out the Prize Claim Center and see if you were the winner of last week's contest where we were giving away Aeronautica Imperialis. Massive thank you to Jerry, Justin, Ben, and Lloyd. But most importantly of all, as always, a massive thank you to you guys. Have a great week of gaming. We'll see you again soon.
Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.